Good afternoon, Brother John.
Good afternoon, Jerry.
Well,
hey, here we are.
We are live.
Yes. We are still alive. I can't believe it. We are still alive. That's a miracle in itself.
We're alive and we're live in the Clark Street Ale House, which is
at 742 North Clark, the trendy section of Chicago River North, just north of the river. Ooh, are you ready?
I am ready. Of course, the bad news is this is coffee, so this is not going to calm me down any.
That's for sure. Okay, so here we are. We are being hosted by the Clark Street Ale House, a world-renowned, critically acclaimed, award-winning drinking emporium that has no crap on their tap. They've got 24 handles that specialize in American craft beer and over 300 types of whiskey, spirits, etc. So if you're interested in drinking, this is the place to be.
And get your hooch and bring your pooch.
Because they have four-legged critters are welcomed here, and quite often when you come through the door, the first one to greet you will be a paw extended and make you feel so good to be here at the Ale House. So we're here live.
Yeah, we are.
And we are, of course, sporting.
Oh!
Ooh, these feel so good, these t-shirts.
John, that's my t-shirt you're feeling.
Oh, excuse
boundaries.
Me.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Your t-shirt should be on some lady. Come on.
Yeah, I can't be on one, so my t-shirt may as well.
Oh, man. Oh, well, so we've got these wonderful t-shirts that we're wearing, which are the first and second edition, but we're here to talk about the third edition of the t-shirt.
Special limited edition.
Collector's item. That it's basically commemorating our stay here, my brother coming up from Austin, Texas, to stay with me for a while here in Chicago. So we're going to, and it's going to mention the Clark Street Ale House on it. And so how does a person get one of these t-shirts?
Well, short of finding one of us on the street and taking it off, which is not recommended. What you find underneath one of these t-shirts is not something you really
want to
get
ugly.
Involved in. There's medical devices involved, I'll just say that.
Hey, they don't call us the bag boys for nothing.
That's us. So here's where you get this thing. You can go to our main website, which is thebro.show. Okay, no .com, none of that crap. Thebro.show. Now, if you can type a little more than that, type shirt.thebro.show, and until tomorrow night, midnight, Central Time, you can buy the shirt John described, which people are going to really be mugging us for, so we have to be careful.
Yes, these are collector's items, no doubt. They have our regular insignias on it with the fist bumps, the bro, etc. But they do mention Clark Street Ale House. So that's very
good. It's
like
good. Your tour t-shirt.
Yes, and by the way, we shouldn't be introducing our guest.
T-shirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we got the man, the Pedia.
We have Wreckopedia. Brett Pontani here, a regular at the Ale House, one who corrals the corner for the regulars at night to make sure that we're all properly situated. And Brett is the buys spirits, is a special buyer for Binney's Beverage Depot, which is the largest chain of liquor stores in the Chicago area and points beyond of several places in Illinois, etc. So, Brett, it's so good to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
You're one of the bros now.
Thank you very much.
He's an honorary bro.
I'm waiting for my first.
Where's your catheter?
I was going to do, in sympathy, I was going to bring one, but I was fresh out.
So. You should have said something. I brought spirit.
He's got so many different types. So, yeah.
I stole them, too. So, that's another
story. No.
It's a good thing that this isn't on film.
Yeah, well, let's just say this is not a show and tell, okay?
Okay.
So, we're here to talk about an incredible experience we had on Thursday when we had the opportunity, Jerry and myself, to go to Wrigley Field to see the first time that Green Day has had a chance to perform at this baseball venue And so what we're going to do today is we're going to be talking a little bit about their tour, actually our experience, and I'm more of a baseball guy. This is the first concert I have gone to at Wrigley, and the fact is that I've probably been to well over 1,000 baseball games there, so it's kind of interesting to kind of get a sense of what some of the differences and some of the similarities are.
Yeah.
And so the show is at 8 o'clock. That's when Green Day is going to start. So we, gates opened at 6, and we live here, I live at Gold Coast, and we got, jumped on the Red Line subway. Ooh. And made our way from 1200 North. After 4 stops, there we are.
I started having risky business flashbacks on that thing. I don't want to tell you. See, that's all I got these days. So I was having those, and I was like, oh, yeah, Deborah, or Rebecca.
Rebecca DeMornay. So what happened was that I noticed that it's a little different than going to a ball game where the crowd is more concentrated. So it was kind of the Green Day crowd seems to kind of go in a longer period of time. A lot of people even show up maybe 15 minutes into the concert.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about the demographics of the people that were there. That was kind of interesting in itself.
Wow. Yeah.
So, like I said, I'd never been to one of these before, and my brother Jerry was able to secure VIP passes. So my anxiety level, not knowing what to expect at a concert, was a little high, and particularly when I didn't even know what a VIP pass was going to get us.
None of us knew. I asked a lot of people, and no one
knew. Yeah, so I had no idea. So we got there. It was, you know, the security and everything was relatively calm. It wasn't that difficult to get in.
No.
A lot easier than a baseball game. And I saw a familiar face as we reached the box office.
That's right.
One of my good friends, the late Kevin Parizo's son, Alex, happens to work for the Cubs.
That's right.
And sure enough, all of a sudden, I look behind the glass, and there's a guy waving at me, and it's Alex. So Alex came out, and he was the one who basically told us, you guys made out like bandits. You got some choice seats at for the concert. So
yeah.
We were sitting. The pit was fairly big. We were 7 rows behind the pit.
The mosh pit.
Slightly off center.
Not the audio pit.
No.
This was filled with people. And these are people ready to rock or whatever it is they do. I wouldn't call it rocking.
No.
Jumping.
A lot of up and
slam
down.
Dance.
Yeah,
yes.
I felt like I was in Africa again.
Oh,
I mean, you should see those guys. They are beautiful. And they got these great things around their necks. They jump up and down in unison. Pretty soon, that's what it was like.
That would go over big in Africa.
Okay.
Hey,
I think so. Big part of our audience.
So we got there in time to hear there was a warm-up group. And I'll tell you, my music, I'm one of these guys who goes anywhere from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And I kind of delve a little bit into some of other music as I've become more acquainted to down here at the Clark Street Ale House on wonderful jukebox.
Hey, you know, before I forget, Jay Cohen from Gersh in L.A., it's a production company. He used to be the tour manager for Green Day, and he's a close friend of this girl, Pamela. She's just wonderful. She's one of my daughter's classmates, and she didn't give me permission to give out her full name.
So I won't.
And she lined us up with Jay. Jay lined us up with Mike Amato, who is the current tour manager, and he got us all the passes. He read our letter, our story, and loved it, and he wanted us to have really good seats. And he's the guy who made this happen.
And we've had a couple of exchanges back and forth with him, so this guy just didn't drop us like a hot potato once we got the tickets.
No.
He told us his story in terms of some of the physical challenges he's had, so he could kind of relate to us.
Yeah.
And so that was incredibly good. So
Go ahead.
The warm-up band is a Brit hard rock band by the name of Catfish and the Bottle Men. I have trouble. Not Bottle Rockets. I always say that incorrectly. Fairly well-known band in Britain, and actually have been here. They went to Lala
Yes,
2015.
No,
Lala.
I've seen Catfish.
And so,
have you seen them, Brett?
Yeah.
Wow.
At Lollapalooza. John's actually been, John the great concert goer, is sort of laying in the weeds here a little bit, because he's actually gone to Dropkick Murphys with us in the past.
Yeah.
And he has gone to Lollapalooza with us in the past.
Wow.
Which is a pretty eclectic, wide-ranging
festival.
This is the last time John and I went to a concert together was 1966, and we saw the Beatles.
Beatles and their
Bush Stadium.
And their warm-up was the Ronettes.
That is correct.
Right.
And I think they were warming up the Ronettes, as I recall.
Oh, jeez. Rain, and the Beatles were showing a lot of bravery because they were out there in a torrential downpour with lightning and playing and didn't let that get in their way.
Yep.
So the thing I found interesting was that Catfish and the Bottlemen, they played probably 6 or 7, 8 songs, and you could get a sense right now after I've seen a whole concert, they could have been playing music very comparable, and they were playing music comparable to Green Day, but their thing was to play good music, not interact a lot, not overreact in terms of jumping around and doing some of the other additional stuff, light shows, etc. So they did a good job, and I'll tell you, I really felt welcome when their warm-up music was Dean Martin singing Ain't That a Kick in the Head. So
right.
I thought, ah, this is good.
Yeah.
So they did their thing, and they were probably done. They were started maybe 7 and were done by 7:30, maybe a little after that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're just kind of, you know, the eager anticipation. And then Green Day has a warm-up rabbit, a bunny.
They do.
They do. And this bunny serves a couple of purposes. And they call it a drunk bunny because they basically kind of push it around. It gets up there and does this thing and gets the crowd all excited.
He's a good dancer, though.
But the other thing is, this is an upgrade bunny because that bunny combs the stands, particularly in the upper deck, before the concert starts. And what they do is they will give you upgrades. So he's a very popular bunny.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Beloved.
Yes. So before the concert started, we had an opportunity for the bunny to kind of just bounce and jump around and do his thing.
It's like he's wearing a Cubs.
He had a number 17, a Chris Bryant jersey on. So he was, you know, being very local about his presence in the ballpark.
Let it be noted, we just covered our sports segment of the show. Go ahead, John.
Lady Gaga had a number 17 Cubs jersey on last night.
Did
sweet.
She?
Hey, that
she's
Chris
hanging
is popular.
Out with that bunny.
Hey, you know what? A big question is...
You heard it here first.
Who is the bunny? I mean, who's behind that costume?
Might be a woman. We don't know.
I don't know. Let's not try to, you know, figure that out. But they did a very, very good job.
Could be a eunuch. They're popular.
Now, the one thing I did do a little research...
Oh, boy. Jeez.
Okay, moving onward. We're moving onward and upward.
Is that possible? Not with me here.
So, the thing is that...
I'm the bad brother, just so we all know. John's the good brother.
It's so evident after just about 5 minutes of the show, so you don't have to tell everybody, okay?
I didn't think it was showing. I should tuck that in.
Oh, I do. I work so hard to keep you out of trouble. You know,
I know.
And we know that that is a big effort. The history proves that is needed.
I didn't get arrested yet.
Not yet, but you're going to be here another week, so I'm watching you very carefully.
I almost got arrested at the Sox Park.
Yeah, he was using his vape, and the guest representative, the service guy, came down and said, you can't smoke here.
Of course,
you know what? At Green Day, that was... that was... Okay. Yes,
hey,
thank you.
Y'all have a good day.
Go to any of the concerts right now, and you'll see that. Lollapalooza, I mean, you will get a contact buzz. In the middle of the crowd.
We got a beer buzz. There wasn't as much weed where we were.
I smelled a fair amount of weed, to be perfectly honest.
I couldn't tell it from the beer. The beer was so skunk beer. I couldn't tell that. And you got to get in there and help those people.
Wrigley Field has... The Chicago Tribune actually just did a newspaper article comparing the ballpark food. And it was kind of unfair because they gave the title to Wrigley over the Cell. It's probably not correct because the Cell has great food. Or guaranteed rate field. But B, they focused on two stands in the center field bleachers of Wrigley Field that absolutely are outstanding. On the beer side, the Wrigley Field, you know, might as well be your neighbor's garage with a dirty batch of beer compared to U.S. Cellular, the guaranteed rate field, which has a whole right field bar dedicated to craft beers.
So,
100 or 200.
If you're a beer lover... So noted.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that Wrigley Field is
beer
dominated,
awful.
Is not even describes how overwhelming the presence of InBev.
It's AB InBev. It's all AB InBev.
Their
so
idea
Budweiser
of a craft beer is
Goose
Island.
That's it.
You guys are talking at the same time. I can't hear it. What was that?
Goose Island.
AB InBev.
AB. Anheuser-Busch InBev.
Oh.
So they're the ones who dominate.
Oh,
and the fact is that Goose Island... is a craft beer that started here in Chicago that was bought by AB, and so that is about as close as you're going to get to a craft beer if you go to Wrigley. So
noted.
Yes.
Okay, so we got there, we heard the warm-up band, we heard the warm-up band's intro, which delighted John to no end, and I liked it too. It was good.
Yes.
And they put on a good show. They didn't have the kind of cameraman that Green Day had. I mean, I just have to say, we were sitting there, there was nothing going on, lights start going out, excitement picks up, you can feel it, you know something's going to happen, and then Trey Cool, the drummer, comes out, gets on his kit, and starts pounding. And from that moment forward, everyone was on their feet. 30,000
yes.
people.
2 hours say. And 40, 33, 40, 40 minutes.
They hold, if they max out Wrigley for a concert, it's 42. So it was at least 40. And that was sold out. So it had to be 41,
God.
42.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Excellent to have the bread of people here.
It is.
Mr. Bontani. Okay, good. So we got there. They said, Trey Cool starts that beat. And you know something good is going to happen. And then, you know, Mike Dirnt comes out. The other guys are kind of already there in the shadows.
Right.
You know,
they got backup band members.
They got guys, sidemen, who are just incredibly cool. But you never know they're sidemen.
No.
You don't see them, and you don't know you're hearing them. Because they just don't feature that much, but they are a part of the sound. Especially when they start playing the more complicated vocals. You start hearing some really good harmonies, that's those guys. So anyway, we haven't heard anything yet. We're just, those drums are just pounding, and Mike's starting to do a little something on the bass. And then once Billy comes out, the place just goes berserk. It was already pretty crazy. And then he comes out, and he does his thing. And there's no way to describe it. You have to be there to see it. You can go on YouTube for a year and not get it. But if you're there, you get it. He owns that crowd.
You can see that this is a crowd that, you know, you might read reviews, this and that, but the fact is that he caters. The whole band is for the crowd. It doesn't care about reviews. It doesn't care about what other people are going to say. They have their audience. You have to understand, this band was formed in 1986. It's been around for 30 years. In fact, just to speak of the demographics right now, I didn't feel uncomfortably older than some of the others, because I would say the crowd was maybe 45, 50 average, and so it was a crowd that is a veteran goers. They know Green Day very well, and they expect something, and what they expect, they definitely got.
Oh my God!
Billy Joe Armstrong is 45 years old, and I mean, when it comes to duration, the two words that kind of come to mind when I think about him is energy and audience participation, and these were constant. There was an energy flow.
Varied.
Yes, it was varied. I mean, he used different words and this and that, and he at different points in songs, but it was practically every song at least once, and quite often more than that, he would get the audience to to recite back
to
and
sing,
ring,
to yell
and
to
jump and all this stuff. So you can see that a major part of their show is not a concert. If you're looking for a great singing voice, this and that, I know we've got good musicians, obviously, to be able to pull something like this off. But they're more into the event. They're more
yes.
into the happening, into the experience that their fans are able to have by going to one of their concerts. And there is no intermission. Don't go. If you think you got a bathroom break coming in the middle of this one, forget it.
No, you better get your tube on.
How long did they play?
2.5 hours. And we were on our feet 2.5 hours. Old men.
Yeah, our dogs were barking afterwards a little bit, but it was well worth it.
Oh, yeah.
So I can only speak from a person who, is looking forward to a unique event. I've been to some concerts more than I actually remember. It's a good thing Brett's here to remind me.
That's right.
And you're going to say, boy, you must have a real good time. You don't even remember going to these concerts. No, not that good.
Not that good.
But the fact is that it is an experience, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not talking about guys who, the tour we're talking about started in September of 2016. It's going to finish up in November of 2017, 120 dates. We got North America, South America, we got Europe, we've got Australia, we've got New Zealand, we've got, they're going to be finishing up this leg of their tour in Central Park sometime in September. They're playing the Rose Bowl, they're playing some big venues. There's in this last summer, they've played a combination of inside-outside venues. They actually played Oakland. These guys are from Oakland.
Right.
Oh, are they from
Oakland?
And are
they from Oakland? I mean, they've thrown out pitches. They've done everything. In fact, I heard some of the things they said about Oakland. I listened to their concert at Oakland a little bit. And so, you know, they're getting there. And you have to understand that Oakland, when it comes to sports, it's like the last team better close the door as they leave. Because we got the Golden State Warriors eventually moving back to San Francisco. We know the football team, the Raiders, are making a move over to Vegas. So what's left is the good old A's, and man, let's face it, that's a little shaky at best, too.
Yep.
So he comments about all the exits of all these sports teams. He says, yeah, we're done with this concert. We're going to burn this fucking place down.
Yep.
He's referring, of course, to the Coliseum, the A's Oakland Coliseum, which is a... So Wrigley wasn't his first baseball venue he's been in, but
first Wrigley.
Wrigley, and boy, did he let everybody know about it, in terms of how much he enjoyed being there.
Yeah.
And
at one point, he was overcome. It seemed like, I think he was. He's a pretty genuine guy. He doesn't strike me as a phony. And he just yelled out, "Mom, I made it! I'm in Wrigley. We're playing Wrigley!" Screaming. He was excited about being in Wrigley Field.
Yeah, Wrigley. In fact, there was one place where they kind of departed from their set list, because I mean, you can go on the internet and figure out exactly what their set list is going to be. About maybe a third or halfway through the concert, they decided to sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
Yeah, and everybody sang along.
Yeah,
well, I mean, everybody sang along to everything.
Yeah, right. So
they really got behind that one.
That was, and I mean, but it was amazing as we're standing there and watching everybody. In fact, I think that if you did the ups arm thing, everybody did it, you know, if I did that all the time, my arms would be aching.
Yeah, so I think John's referring to, Billy just yells out in the songs, you know, "Get those hands up in the air, you fuckers." Whoa, you get your hands up in the air, you know, you don't know what to do, you have to.
Yeah, and then they're bouncing, jumping up and down.
Jump. People
but
don't.
I mean, but the thing is that, you know, typically you would see the mainline person, you know, the headliner, on a go back and maybe, well, we're going to have our saxophone player play one of his songs now, and then he'd go back and take a blow. Not Billy. Billy, here's his idea of resting, playing a song on his back.
Yeah. Oh, and dry humping the stage. We got to watch that,
yeah,
too.
Oh, boy, yeah.
That was special.
So much.
And different.
He said he liked being in Wrigley.
He liked Wrigley. He showed it, too. Left a little something behind, maybe. We don't know.
What? Please. Oh, dear.
Sorry.
So, it was... So, I mean, I had a very, very, very good time with an experience that I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, I like Jerry said, you can watch a few of the YouTubes, you can listen to some of their tunes, but you really don't get the full effect, because this is more than just music.
Oh yeah,
is what they go into. The other thing is, Billy likes to give his little political tidbits in there.
Yeah, I would call them homilies.
Yeah, they weren't real long, but he made sure to castigate not only the Nazis and the white supremacists, but he included Donald Trump in that little group,
too.
That was a triumvirate he was working on.
Yep.
There. And the other thing is, he does this thing where he says, everybody's screwed up, or maybe even more than that. And he says, yeah, we're all different, this and that, but here we're all together. He kind of has a way of making everybody say, yeah, you're a bunch of misfits, but we're here together to enjoy it.
Yeah, he celebrated that. I mean, if you think about their songs, even from the beginning, the whole ethos of punk rock is, yeah, I'm fucked up bad, but I don't give a shit. And you give fucked up in this the finger, and you just go right on with your shit, and it's great. And it is. That's the whole ethos of it. And he's taken that germ and just, like, broadcasted it in a very palatable way. So when you're there, and he does his little homilies, I call it, because this is a religious event,
I thought it was a humply. No, excuse me.
That's the
else.
Other part.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
When he's doing that stuff, you know, he starts drawing people in and drawing people in. You know, he names off all the stuff. Maybe you're a little different gender-wise. Maybe, you know, you've got this. Maybe you've got that. Maybe it doesn't matter. Fuck it. Leave it at the gate. We're here now. Let's celebrate. This is life. We're all alive.
Yes.
And boy, that really rang with me. You know, I lost a son. You know, I lost a couple other things that are pretty close to me.
And we're so, close to you.
Real close. The backup singers, as my daughter calls them. And so, you know, a lot of loss, you know, a lot of loss. And he just made me feel whole again. It was a, for me, this was a religious event. I mean, he drew me in, and he drew a lot of people in. And he just made them feel like, yeah, we're okay. We're not just okay. We're great. And this is great. He was celebrating everything. Let's hear it for the Midwest. They were in the Midwest.
He did mention Elmhurst. He mentioned Elmhurst too. Most of these, you know, these guys will always say, well, they got their little standard shtick and they just fill in the blank with Chicago or Boston or wherever they are.
He got into it.
He got a little bit more personal. And then when he said Elmhurst, I thought, ooh, this is getting interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of his first gigs, and his son.
Yes.
Followed up and played one of his first gigs there.
Oh, that's right. So,
yeah. So it was really great. It was, and the other thing about these guys touring that gets missed, I think, is if you do go on YouTube, you'll see, or in Instagram, you'll see that his wife is at a lot of the concerts because she's showing film footage and she gives the backstories to a lot of stuff that's going on, and it's just great. And Mike Dirnt's kid Brixton is there most of the time for most of these concerts. If they want family, they get family. And they're pretty much a dry group these days. Billy Joe had kind of a breakdown 4 years ago, had to go into rehab. In fact, Mike made him go into rehab, otherwise they weren't going to be Green Day anymore. And he got it. And I think a lot of what we're seeing, he now has, this is his substitute drug. What he's doing out there is filling that void.
Now you can feel that this is a very enjoyable pleasure experience for him. I mean, one of the good things for, I think I felt we were benefiting from, was he had been touring the Midwest, and he had actually toured I think Cleveland or Indianapolis maybe 3 days before, so he had a little break. In addition to the fact, the weather here in Chicago, like it was in the 60s last night. We're wearing our jackets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny because with the beginning, you kind of felt, well, gee, you needed the jackets, but the energy and the heat that was being generated by the fans, particularly where we were sitting, was so great. In addition to the fact, we haven't even talked about the doggone light show and the pyrotechnics that came along with it.
Yeah, they did, like, there are parts of the songs where they really hit that, the drums really hit it hard to accent something.
Yeah.
And they will, like, blow off a bomb while that goes on. Or there's some spectacular thing that happens during a song, like a real big cymbal crash, and you will see these flamethrowers. There were a dozen flamethrowers behind the band. And I'd say these nozzles were at least 4, 5, 6 feet long. And these flames would go out at least 20 feet above them.
Above them, yes.
And they were big flames. And the first time we saw those, I felt this heat on my face. I felt the heat on my face, and I looked over at John, and he's looking at me.
Yeah, it's like, this is it's sort of like it kind of, poof, just kind of had a little arc and went over the band and over the pit, and it's hitting us.
Yeah. So let's talk about our audience participation. We talked a little about the basics, where his call-outs that he's doing constantly, you know. Get those hands up in the air, you know, and stuff. And so that's one component. There's another component, which is bringing people on stage.
Ooh, yes.
This is huge. And I think if he just did the same thing over and over and over again, it would get a little exhausting. And it was a little exhausting for us, because we're old. But man, he brought a kid on stage. First of all, he goes out. They're playing the background to this song, and they're playing the intro to it over and over and over. They're fixing to play this song. And he says, I'm exhausted. I need a singer.
Yeah, well, my throat.
My throat. I need a singer. And he starts stumbling around out on this catwalk that goes out into the audience. And he's looking. Who can sing? And he's pointing at people.
Who knows the lyrics?
Can you sing? You can't sing. Can you sing? And he gets real personal with these people. It's so funny. And then finally, he's looking right down at his feet. And he says, "Don't I know you? Get up here, you little fucker." And it's this 9-year-old kid.
Oh, dear.
And it's the cutest kid in the world, too. And so he brings him up, and the song was Knowledge by Operation Ivy. It's an old punk song. And so it's very repetitive, very punky, very whatever. And so he gets his kid on the mic, and I'll be damned, the kid knew the song.
He knew the song, and he knew all the raunch lyrics, too. And what he does is he picks a song for the youngest kid to sing that's got the most filth in it. But I'm a younger guy, I'm sorry.
My goodness. Free expression.
Right? Am I right, Brett? That's expression. That's punk.
That is.
Okay. So I'm learning.
I can't believe it. When this kid said fuck, you know, and by the way, the kid had a t-shirt that had the word fuck with two X's for the U and the C.
Yeah.
On his t-shirt with Green Day on it. And so, yeah, when he said that, John did his usual thing. Ooh! He put his hand on his mouth and goes, ooh! High point. That was a high point for me. I thought, man, I wish I had a camera now. That would be great.
But that was one of three. He had a woman come up.
Yes.
And also a guy, right, just a guy. And in addition, then...
The guy plays.
Well, we got three singers. And then after singing, what do they have to do? He has to find a guy to play...
Guitar. Yeah, so they're playing Longview, I think. And it's an incredible, great song. It's got three chords, so it's pretty simple to play. And so he brings the guy up, puts the guitar on him, shows him what key they're playing it in by pointing to the fret, points to the three chords. He looks at the guy nods his head, boom, they're off to the races.
And he's jumping around playing.
Just like Billy.
Yes.
Except that he's 300 pounds.
He's a little big. And I'll tell you, the thing is, the enthusiasm they showed, well, this guy was a little bit too enthusiastic because, first thing, if you go up on stage, the first thing you're going to do, Billy is going to give you a big bear hug. And, of course, Billy's going to get lost because, you know, he's like 5'5" or 5'6". He's a little guy.
He lost. He is up on his tippy toes trying to hug this guy. And the guy kissed him on the cheek and a buggy. Billy got right into it and started kissing him. And they were, that's a love fest. And then they break and they start playing this song. And the guy does a pretty good job.
He did a very good job. The problem was that afterwards, he wanted, and of course, afterwards, he wanted to give more hugs to Billy. And Billy had enough hugs. So the security needed to come out and basically escort the guy up.
But the guy got a guitar.
He gets a guitar out of it. And it's kind of funny when you watch him play, all of a sudden, hey, that's a different guitar he's playing now. Oh, I get it. This is what he's going to give out for free. Now, not to make the idea it's a cheap guitar.
Man. You know what those are? Those are Les Paul special editions built especially for Billy. Holy moly. So those are worth big bucks on the market. That guy got himself a real guitar.
Well, and imagine if he knew the provenance of the fact that it came from Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yes,
Well, the back says so, and I think they're signed.
Wow.
Yeah. But he has to get somebody. I mean, it sounds as if when he does this, they're pretty consistently managed to get people up on stage that can actually play at least a little bit, right?
He tests them.
Even though it's simple three chords, they can still play a little bit.
He tests them. You know, if he has suspicions about a guy, he says, okay, what key is it in?
He'll ask a couple of key questions. Right. Oh, excuse me, no pun intended.
Oh, pun intended. He meant to do that. So, anyway, the guy gets up there, he does a good job, he gets off. So that was fantastic. The little kid gets up and says fuck a couple times, and it's beautiful. And what was the woman? What was she doing?
Well, she was, I think, actually in the stands for a while and singing because he threw the mic. Sometimes he put the mic.
Oh, yeah, he throws the mic out.
Yeah.
And they catch it somehow.
Yeah.
She sang part of a verse, and then she pitches it back to Billy. Billy catches it.
Now, of course, the thing is, if you're
ballpark.
Singing up there,
ballpark.
You don't
More
get.
Sports.
Good
Thank
call.
You. Thank you.
So if you're up there singing and you're done, there's only one way you can exit that stage, and that is not on the sides. You've got to dive into the pit.
Yeah.
And everybody gets off on that. It's funny.
Have you ever seen a dive before?
Probably not.
Have
and
you
not
seen
live.
One, Brett?
Oh, I've been. I grew up going to punk
seen
shows.
One.
Had he
not
at no,
no
because
no,
they
no,
don't
no,
really
no.
allow it at Lollapalooza. Okay. You would have been too far back at Dropkick because they'll do it at Dropkick Murphy shows, but we're usually towards the back,
toward the Dropkick show. Oh, it was great. It was the kid who jumped.
I think all three of them did.
Did they?
Yeah.
Wow.
The woman maybe didn't because she was in
She's
this van out,
there,
out there, but the other two definitely did.
Oh yeah, it was a moment.
So that was beautiful. that was a big part of it. He does a couple of encores.
Oh yeah.
In fact, I would say the only time there is a, because I'll tell you, the pace of this show is constant. If there's one time when you would, when it does slow down a little bit, it's not in the middle of it like you would expect. It's at the end when he goes acoustic. So
the one encore was Forever Now, which is my favorite song, and it's like a little bit like a mini rock opera. Mm-hmm. It's about 9 minutes long. It's got several movements in it, and it's really, I love that song. It's all about his struggle, 4 years ago. It's all about his breakdown, really. And it's got great lyrics to it. If anyone ever feels like they don't know who they are, listen to that song, because that's what it's about, because that's what he was about. His one line is really good. He says, screaming out my memories as if I was never there.
Mm.
That's what he says he's doing when he sings. Screaming out my memories as if I was never there.
Wow.
You know, and the beginning of the song starts out, my name is Billy and I'm freaking out. I thought I was then, but now I can't really figure it out. And it's all about his confusion, his disorientation, all the different things he goes through. It's got one verse, it's incredible. It changes key, the song changes key, it goes up. And if this is what you call the good life, I want a better way to die. It's really, and he does it, it's like angelic almost the way he does it. It's so beautiful. And they have great harmonies on all these things too. It's a really good production. He did a great job on that song. And there's lots of, you know, memorable parts of that thing. Well, another part that's really pure Billy Joel, one verse I think is really cool. He says, I want to start a revolution. I want to hear it on my radio. And then the next line is, I'll put it off another day. That's it, right?
Right.
That's
right.
The dilemma of a musician with a message. Is that it's not going to happen unless you really are patient. And of course, he's not. He's ADD and all the other stuff everybody else is. So, yeah, he doesn't get it. And then he does another verse. What is it? It's really cool. It's about, he says, I don't want to think about tomorrow. I don't want to think about the road. You know, stuff like that. So it's a very personal song about his journey, his stuff. And then by the end of it, the last verse is, I don't want to stand in line no more. Which is really, you know, everybody's ever been to a post office knows that one. So,
yeah, particularly here in Chicago, we got some of the worst shouldn't say anything.
Yeah. Another day.
Another day, another
topic. It was beautiful. That was the first encore. And then he did another song following that. I can't remember it at the moment. Might have been one of the Revolution Radio, was it?
I'm not real sure.
And we're a little foggy on that because too much jumping. And then they went off stage. Oh, no. It was Jesus of Suburbia.
I think the set list.
Huh?
I think I might have the set list.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got the set list here, too. It was Jesus of Suburbia.
Okay.
That was his second song of the first encore. And so it was during Jesus of Suburbia we started heading for the L, the subway or whatever. And so, there was a second encore after that was entirely acoustic, which was 21 Guns, which is my second favorite song. That's the one that kind of saved me when I was really going downhill. And that song is so cool because the main lyric to that one is 21 Guns, lay down your arms, give up the fight. And the next verse is 21 Guns, put up your arms into the sky. You know?
Yes.
And so that is what that's his whole ethos is. Yeah, quit fighting, give it up, put your arms in the air, right? Put your hands in the air, and join the idiot nation. That's basically his message. And man, that song really drives it home. And some people were lucky enough to hear that on Broadway. And that's,
yes, I think it's important for us to realize, as much as we've kind of talked about the specialization, he's got his own crowd, this or that, we're talking about a Grammy winning, we're talking about a Tony winning, because he had his American Idiot Broadway play. In addition to the fact,
he played St. Jimmy the last month of the Broadway.
He also, we got a group that the first time they're eligible make it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 2015. So this isn't just a Johnny Come Lately, a local garage band here we're talking about. We're talking about a group that is very well known and been very well received in a variety of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And Billy Joe, as we said, I think before in one of the other shows, he's a lead in a movie. played a secondary character in another movie. He's a Nurse Jackie. He played a ghost hanging out at a bar, helping people make bets.
How about the collaborations he does with other groups, in addition to the fact that Norah Jones, once I found out that he did some Everly Brothers Country and Western album with Norah Jones, I said, well, listen, if Norah hangs with Ted, the bear, in the movie, and I said, if that's good enough for me, as far as I'm concerned, Billy Joe is hanging with the right people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did a beautiful album with her, for Everly, it's called.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of good harmony in it, too.
All good harmony. It's all Everly Brothers style harmony, and those two really can sing together.
Yes, that's for sure.
That's the hallmark of a good singer, too. If you can harmonize with another singer who's got a different style, then you're a good singer.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony Bennett talking about concerts. Ravinia, Lady Gaga, on and off over the last 3 years, has toured consistently with Tony Bennett, doing nothing but American pop, 50s pop, but American pop classics, the American Songbook. And she defers to Tony Bennett, as she should, and when she sings, it's beautiful.
Oh.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I love it when people break out of their mold and do that stuff.
So. I think that the one of the things I was impressed with is the way that when you think of Wrigley Field, you think baseball field, but the fact is that as a venue, a concert venue, the sound's pretty good.
Oh, man,
the fact is that you've got to obviously have the right equipment, and these bands bring that in, and stage, et cetera, that makes a difference.
But the stage, actually, interestingly enough, last night was the fourth concert that I've been to in Wrigley this year. Wrigley actually owns the shell of the stage,
right.
And it's the same thing they've used at least as far back as like Pearl Jam,
okay,
and all those concerts. They own the shell of the stage. I don't know whether it makes it easier or harder on the touring band, but then all the other equipment, the amps and everything,
get moshed,
come inside, and the lighting and all that stuff gets brought in. But the shell of the stage, Wrigley owns, because they can get it up and down in 4 days. Because they're going to play, Zac Brown Band is playing tonight, and then they'll have it torn up, and the Cubs are playing the Pirates on Monday.
That's how fast. And it'll be interesting to see how the field has reacted, because this year they're playing more concerts at Wrigley than they have by far any other year. They're playing 10 concerts, including this string of concerts right now. So, and I'm sure that if the field, if there's anything wrong with it, we're going to hear about it. The players will say something.
Where we were sitting was actually elevated about a foot.
Yeah.
We were on top of, it was like a big mound.
Right, and you've seen what they've done. Because the stretch where Billy Joel played, Florida Georgia Line played, there were a few bands that played in the stretch about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They seem to have gotten down the covering they need to put over the outfield. Because you notice, everything that they put in the infield's only on the base paths and the dirt. Nothing touches the grass,
right,
at all in the infield. Then when you get beyond the infield, they put up the sound stage or the sound booth, and then everything forward. But they have a whole layer of, and it's not very thick. It's less than an inch thick.
Kind of plastic.
But that whole layer of plastic that covers all the grass. Every inch of grass is covered by this plastic.
Right. And it's elevated too. There's air in there.
It seems to have been. You know, when they came out of that stretch where Billy Joel, Florida Georgia Line, that whole stretch of concerts a few weeks ago, they played on a Monday as well. There was no concert on Sunday. They cleaned it up. Monday they played. That was that Reds game, the 15-5 Reds game.
Yes.
And it was, the field was beautiful. There was nothing wrong with the field. So
that's really some engineering, really, if you think about it.
Right.
A great venue. Great venue. No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, it was, whew. It was something else.
Right. What do you think in terms of the neighborhood reaction to various bands, and which ones you think, you weren't there last night, you were there last night for Lady Gaga, but you hear about AC/DC maybe creating a little ruckus, or...
The ones that seemed to be there, they weren't real thrilled with AC/DC because of the noise. They weren't real thrilled with the first Pearl Jam show because they played till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Or
2 o'clock in the morning. And that was literally Eddie Vedder when he did his last song, because apparently during the whole concert it was delayed by rain. They were negotiating with the city over the fines they were going to have to pay for going overtime, because they're supposed to be done at 11 o'clock p.m. So they were negotiating, and I think that somebody must have bottom line, because Eddie Vedder came out at 1:50 and said, this is our last song, and we will walk off the stage, and the lights will be on at 2 o'clock, because otherwise we're going to ruin it for everybody.
Right.
And they played till 1:58, and the lights went on, and they left the stage.
Wow.
And they were done. And then the other shows, which I think have caused a little anxiety in the neighborhood, were Fish. Fish did three shows. The Dead tribute band, whatever they're calling themselves now, were here. That's caused a little bit of distress because perhaps there were some exchanges of various different intoxicants going on the streets and in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Especially before the Fish shows and the Dead cover shows.
I'm just wondering if how the last night's concert is going to be received by the neighborhood, if there will be any feedback in terms of it. I would think there might. I don't know. It's hard
to say.
It wasn't
bad when we were out at DL.
Hey, as far as I'm concerned, the first band, Catfish and the Bottlemen, were louder than Billy, than Green Day.
Yeah.
By the way, we should give kudos to Jason Otto.
Jason Otto is here with us. Yeah.
Yes. And Jason was the one who's provided us with a little audio support, particularly some good music, some Green Day.
And Gopher for alcoholic beverages if needed.
Yes. And
he's also doing the beverage service for the crew. Things are loose.
So does that mean he's the executive producer then, right?
Yeah, he's executive.
Yes, exactly.
He brought the cigars for afterwards.
Cigars, yeah, the celebratory cigars we're going to have afterwards.
Yeah, we're now the bro show, now with swearing and cigars.
Yes. Wow, I didn't think that would ever come to be, but it happened today.
It happened today, and we're here. A couple more closing things before we sign off. John said it, and I think he said it well, is that Green Day doesn't do concerts. They are not a punk band. They do events. They stage gatherings, I think you'd have to call them. And they are events for those who don't feel like they fit in. And that can be because of their losses, their cancer, their gender, their sexuality, their politics, their color, their religion, their IQ, their love, or their death. And for me, John took a picture of me outside of Wrigley Field with the Green Day playing Wrigley, and I was kind of like the historic picture. And I really wasn't smiling all that much because I was thinking to myself, I really wish my son had been here with me. And I was kind of his proxy, I felt.
Right.
So it wasn't a tremendously joyous moment for me, but when Trey Cool started pounding his kit, all that went away.
Yes.
I felt like, fuck it, my son is here. And we're all here. And that's what they make you feel. They make you feel like they're all here. And, you ask yourself, well, is this part of the act? Maybe they do this all the time, blah, 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 blah. And, but here's the bottom line, and for me it's the acid test, is that here's Billy Joel. He got transferred to a school. Mike Dirnt, he's an orphan. He's never known his parents. He's living with some foster people nearby. He got transferred to the same school, they're in the same class, they're both class clowns. They decided right away to become co-class clowns, which is difficult, because they usually compete. And so over time, they discovered they both love music. And Billy Joe had been playing and recording since he was five. And that little thing he does where he puts his arms up in the air after he finishes a song and looks pleased with himself, his first music teacher taught him to do that. And he still does it, And so he's a guy who is authentic and true to his roots, loves Oakland, working class guy, and just to show it was for reals, and it's his family. His dad dies when he's 10. He records Wake Me Up When September Ends, which is what that's about. Everyone thinks it's about 9/11. No, it's about Billy Joe's dad. And so he grew up without a father, really. And so here he is, his mom's a single mom. She's got six kids. And Mike Dirnt, he is a foster kid, and his foster parents split up, and the mom wants to move him out of Rodeo. He says, "No way, Jose." He goes over to Mrs. Armstrong and says, "Can I stay in the garage?" She says, "Yes." And so they grew up together, literally. And so that is like an acid test for me. If you can do that kind of shit, because that is not easy. That's not easy. We're staying over on the Gold Coast. Everyone's walking their dogs, their pseudo kids, and all this stuff, right?
Right. That's kind of what dogs serve society now for a lot of people.
Yeah. And so, for someone to shell out $100, even in that income level, they balk. But Mrs. Armstrong didn't balk. Billy Joe didn't balk. Mike Dirnt never went hungry, you know, and they just kept, and that's hard stuff, and that's what I've learned. People with the least give the most, and that's their whole thing, and, you know, they want to see that happen. And if you got a, you got a story, they want to hear it. They heard John's story and my story, and they said, you guys are friends of the band. And they said, that's what they called us.
Yes.
And they sent us VIP passes, gave us the treatment. The guys who got us the tickets followed up with us on Facebook. You know, every post I make, everybody, you know, gives their thumbs up and their smiles and their hearts and all that good stuff. On Twitter, you know, people are responding. Even on LinkedIn, believe it or not, the business network, people are going, how was the concert? How was the concert?
You know, yes.
Everybody knows what it meant to me. And they delivered way beyond what I thought they would. So I want to thank my brother John, who's the best big brother in the world.
Oh, yeah. Dear.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I
appreciate it.
He came through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
he just wants to stay with me another week. This is a reason to give you.
Oh, my God. All right.
Well, the question is,
am I that transparent? If Jason, am I that transparent? Maybe.
Okay, if you're staying for another week, and I know your deep love of baseball, how many baseball games are you going to go to this
Well,
week?
You know what happened?
Oh, this is good. This is
last
good.
Night, I was
because
wearing
I have the tickets for the Cubs and the Pirates, and I'm in Atlanta at a conference. So
we'll talk.
If you'd like to go back to
we'll negotiate that. That'll be. But here's what happened last night. I wore my Listen Grateful Dead White Sox shirt. This woman is coming up the aisle, says...
Well, what did I say before that, Bill?
What? Oh, yeah, then he says, wow, if there's one thing I want, because I said to him, I said, you know, we didn't get any Green Day shirts. He says, I don't want any Green Day shirts. What I really want is a Grateful Dead shirt. I thought, oh, dear, here
with
I am.
With the socks on it.
And so I wore it last night, thinking, oh, boy, there he is. He's going to be drooling on my shirt. Drooling on my shirt, right, you know. Right. So the
drooling's
thing,
all I got.
Yeah. Go ahead. So then this woman comes up to me.
More eunuch humor.
This woman comes up to me and says, oh, you've got the Grateful Dead shirt. Are you going to be here next Friday? And I said, what are you talking about? Is it the tribute band coming back? She says, oh, no. They're having another Grateful Dead day here at the ballpark where you can get a shirt. So, I mean, I got it. They're only giving away 1,750 of these shirts. So what I did is I immediately got on my phone and bought tickets and coupons to get shirts for us on Friday.
Excellent.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Who are they playing?
More fans.
They're playing Rays.
Rays. Oh, that's a good game, too.
Oh, yeah. I like the Rays. I like Kevin Kiermaier.
But I'm going to get that shirt.
He actually enjoyed the game last night.
Oh, I loved it.
Because it was
walk-off homer, buddy.
It was a great game watching it. You know what? This is as a on the sports side, as a Cubs fan, having lived through some 100 loss seasons, culminating in a World Series last year. As a White Sox fan, the vibe that is going on right now with a 90 plus loss White Sox team really feels a lot like the way the Cubs felt in let's say 2012, 2013.
Right.
Because no matter what. They're bad. They're the island of misfit toys, with a few exceptions. Yet, they get ninth inning walk off home runs because they're having fun and they care.
Oh, we're starting to talk too much baseball here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get some fake news in too.
They
didn't do the bang bang, is the song. The main line of it is I don't want to be a celebrity martyr. It's really great. But sometimes at some shows they do sing this, they get the audience chanting no fascist USA,
you know, Nazis did, all did, that
they yeah. didn't do it this time. I was kind of hoping they would, but anyway. Wow. That's our fake news.
Yes. Okay. I think we have covered all the bases
since nice metaphor. So we've done it 53 minutes and 52 seconds. Guys, this has been great. We owe a big thanks to Jeremy, manager.
Yes, Jeremy, the manager here at the Clark Street Ale House. They did a great job.
Who asked his last name not be revealed for purposes of anonymity. He's not sure yet.
Yep. So, but in fact, the other thing is we're going to bring in, because we also have to give a kudos to the barkeep who's been very good at making sure that the accommodations back here in the beer garden have been top-notch, giving us control of the television, doing all kinds of other wonderful things for us. So we needed a piece of duct tape, or we needed an extra glass of water. She was here for us.
Yeah, I had a crying fit earlier, and she helped me out with that. She's really, Kasha is really sweet.
She's a good kid. And the other thing is that when it comes to, by far, when the four-legged critters are here, Kasha is the one. Yep. So Kasha.
Here's Kasha.
Hey, hello. Hey.
The Bro Show has a woman. And it's about time. I don't count.
Okay. So the fact is, Kasha's been a barkeep here for how many years, do you figure?
Probably 9 years with a little break in between.
Yeah, a few times where she's just so wanted so much, they just got to bring her back.
People
just
love her.
The Ale House cannot live without Kasha having at least a couple of nights where she's tending bar.
I think so.
So, and the thing is that the animals, the four-legged types, the dogs here just love Kasha, and she's always feeding, make sure they have water, giving them treats.
I was just cuddling up with a French bulldog and a Yorkie about 10 minutes ago.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to try and pose as a dog when I came in. I was hoping you'd scratch behind my ears. And, you know, my back leg goes pretty crazy when you do that. We'll see if we can't work that out.
I mean, now that I know
that
your
cramp
plan.
In your leg? Working out?
Yeah, okay, I got a little cramp in my leg. Scratch behind my ear. Oh, this has been wonderful. Please thank Jeremy for us.
Yes, I absolutely will. I'm glad you guys are enjoying yourselves.
We are. We've had a great time. It's really been one of our better podcasts. I mean, being able to see an event and talk about it.
Oh, wow. Nothing like it.
It was really good. So,
all right. Well, hey, everybody, it's great.
Okay.
John and I will be talking tomorrow.
Good enough.
And you guys keep the conversation going. Love y'all.
Okay, good enough. Adios.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, whatever.
Yeah. Good job.